It's not a foregone conclusion in my professional military estimate that the Taliban automatically win in Kabul falls or any of those kind of dire predictions. That's not a foregone conclusion.
Afghanistan remains a violent place. It's Monday, May 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghan journalists under fire. Virus infections build across India. Fiery return for a Chinese rocket. Space wine. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Top U.S. defense officials say that less than 1 week into the pullout of American troops from Afghanistan, the drawdown is going according to plan. Still, brutal violence continues as a powerful bomb blast Saturday near a girls' school in Kabul killed more than 60 people and injured more than 100 others. As VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports, the blast is a reminder that very real challenges remain.
The U.S. military has closed one base in Afghanistan and pulled out enough weapons and equipment to fill about 60 of these C-17 cargo planes.
Less than 1 week in, the drawdown is going according to plan.
Speaking Thursday at their first joint briefing, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Mark Milley vowed to continue aiding the Afghan military with funding and support from bases outside Afghanistan. But the leaders acknowledged big challenges looming soon, including how U.S. forces will continue to train and advise their Afghan partners.
We'll also continue to take a look at training them in perhaps other locations. We don't know. We haven't figured that out 100% yet. But also things like maintenance support and perhaps CT support from over the horizon.
The U.S. is leaving Afghanistan after nearly 20 years of war.
What we have tried for many years, which is to defeat the Taliban militarily, has not worked. And we are stalemated on the security front. We are stalemated at Doha. And sometimes it feels like we're stalemated within the Afghan government in terms of building a coherent Afghan political set inside Kabul.
And as the U.S. pulls out, Milley says Afghan forces haven't crumbled under the increased pressure.
It's not a foregone conclusion in my professional military estimate that the Taliban automatically win in Kabul falls or any of those kind of dire predictions. That's not a foregone conclusion.
The U.S. military says Afghanistan has seen 80 to 120 enemy-initiated attacks each day for the past year. That pace, along with stalled peace talks, points to a rough road ahead. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Myanmar's junta cool on commitment to ASEAN's plan for stabilizing country. Myanmar classifies resistance government as terrorist organization. Coronavirus cases still surging in India. Uyghur editor's family members charge Chinese documentary misrepresents them. China to create line of separation at Everest summit on COVID fears. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more can be found daily at Facebook at VOA Asia, also at Instagram, Twitter, and at our voanews.com website. Let's continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A former Tolo news anchor in Afghanistan was gunned down last week, another reminder of the risks journalists face in that country. VOA's Azazul Popol, Hikmat Sorosh, and Jalal Mirzad have more from Afghanistan in this report narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
In Afghanistan's southern province of Kandahar, former Tolo News anchor Nemat Rawan, who recently joined the country's Ministry of Finance as a media official, was gunned down early Thursday. 28-year-old Rawan is the fifth journalist to be killed in the country this year. Local journalists are demanding an immediate investigation.
We are extremely concerned because this is not the first time that a journalist has been killed in Kandahar and the region. Previously, we had more journalists killed in Helmand. The situation has got intense because the previous day, the Taliban had issued new threats to journalists, and then there were reports that the head of NDS also made threatening remarks. The journalists are very concerned, and their lives are in danger.
Journalists should not be killed, as they are the people who report on the public's problems.
Media advocacy group NICE Chief says it is not in either side's benefit to threaten a free press.
Neither side has the right to threaten media and journalists. Any threat against media and journalists at the time when we are moving towards peace can hurt media and the peace process.
Under increasing pressure from the Taliban and the government, some Afghan journalists are appealing to the international community for help.
The Taliban didn't specify which media or which reporter is violating, but we are in a very sensitive time of peace talks. We want the international community, especially the U.S., to bring the discussion of freedom of press and supporting media into the peace talks so we don't face threats like this in the future.
We are worried. The situation is worrisome as journalists endure pressure from both sides and have sacrificed so much. We are being killed. We want the U.S. and the international community to take a constructive step to improve the current situation and play a positive role in the peace process. Otherwise, we will lose the 20-year gains for freedom of expression in this country.
According to the Afghan Journalist Safety Committee, 43 Afghan journalists have left the country and over 1,000 others have given up on their profession due to the increase in targeted killings in the last 6 months. For Azizullah Popal in Kandahar, Hikmat Sarosh and Jalal Mirzad in Kabul, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, ethnic Karen guerrillas burned down a Myanmar military outpost, capturing it without a fight after its garrison fled at their approach, according to a senior Karen officer. Fighting with the Myanmar army escalated after a military coup in February. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very happy you've chosen to begin your week with us at VOA Asia. Bodies piled up at a crematorium in the Indian capital Delhi last week as relatives of coronavirus sufferers scrambled to refill life-saving oxygen cylinders. Flames rose from funeral pyres placed side by side as family members performed funeral rites. We hear more with VOA's Mariama Diallo.
Families say goodbye to loved ones as funeral workers prepare bodies for cremation. By Wednesday, the coronavirus has taken the lives of over 226,000 people in India, and the number of those infected had surpassed 20.6 million people. Amid the surge, oxygen remained in short supply.
I am here to get a cylinder refilled for a relative. I have been here since 5 in the morning. Nothing has happened so far. People are getting hassled. I hope to get one here, but many are leaving disheartened.
I've been waiting here since 4 in the morning yesterday. One night and a day has passed. They say 50 cylinders will be distributed. They check 100 documents and reject 90 out of them and accept only 10.
The list of required documents include a COVID test report, a recent medical officer's prescription order, and proof of ID. On Wednesday, a top court ordered India's government to rapidly submit a plan on how it will meet the oxygen requirements of Delhi's hospitals.
This is a very critical time in our country.
A top scientific advisor also warned the Indian government that it would inevitably face more waves of infections even after the current one subsides.
Phase 3 is inevitable, given the high levels of circulating virus. But it's not clear on what time scale this phase 3 will occur. Hopefully, incrementally, but we should prepare for new waves.
As people continue to line up for vaccines, India, a country of 1.4 billion, has so far administered 160 million vaccines. Efforts to scale up the vaccination drive have been hampered by a shortage of doses. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Now on VOA Asia, the remnants from an out-of-control Chinese rocket have safely re-entered Earth's atmosphere over the Indian Ocean, according to Chinese state media. U.S. Space Command confirmed the rocket's descent over the Arabian Peninsula, but did not say where the remnants landed. Some of the reports say pieces of the rocket landed near the Maldives. VOA's Adriana Jung spoke with Paolo Lozano, director of the Space Propulsion Lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, to find out more about the rocket and if the situation was preventable.
This is a stage of a rocket that was used by the Chinese to put in orbit a part of their space station. It's quite a big part of the rocket. And this part of the rocket actually doesn't have the ability to control itself for known reentry. And the structures used in the design for these stages are not capable to withstand those kind of pressures in a single piece.
Do you think China should be responsible for cleaning up after this reentry?
They are certainly responsible for not giving enough information or enough, work on the design to prevent an uncontrolled reentry. I think that that's important. The cleanup is probably not going to be even possible. They will very likely just be lost forever in the ocean.
You're saying that this is a design flaw.
It's a design choice because, with more investment, what you can do is provide these stages with enough control. So, for example, provide propulsion and provide attitude control and communications so that you know where these objects will fall. But in this case, it was a design choice. The choice was not to include these more expensive and more complex elements into the design of the stage. So, instead, the stage is left as a non-cooperative object, basically, as a piece of debris.
So you're saying that China actually has the technology. It just decided not to use it.
In many cases, you can actually design your orbits, design the elements on your rocket stages so that this is a more controlled process.
Is there a international organization that could set some kind of regulations?
Yeah, it's always difficult to work with these legal frameworks. Every nation does this separately. There are, of course, agreements between nations on how to behave in space. Basically, what individual nations do is they work responsibly trying to minimize the damage to people and property when they have situations like this. And, the expectation is that the international community will look at all these guidelines and suggestions. But in terms of laws, we have to be responsible space citizens. The local space environment is becoming more and more crowded. There is a significant amount of space debris that could prevent the utilization of space by all nations. So I think that, making a call for people to be more responsible on how to design their devices so that they not only, prevent damage to people and property, also design them to not make themselves, a threat to the space environment, which provides so many services to today's world.
Paolo Lozano, director of the Space Propulsion Lab at MIT, speaking with VOA's Adriana Jung. Wine from space lands on Earth with an out-of-this-world price tag. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more from space.
VOA previously reported on an experiment aboard the International Space Station to research how bottled wine would develop outside Earth's atmosphere. 12 bottles left the ISS in January after 14 months in space. Now, one of those bottles is up for sale. It comes with a second bottle of the same $10,000 wine that never left Earth. Tim Tiptree from auction house Christie's says it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
The lucky buyer of this, a unique lot will be able to taste it's a galactic version against the terrestrial version because you get one of each. So, that'll be a fascinating, tasting to do.
Christie's expects the bottle to fetch about $1 million at auction. The company's website says proceeds of the sale will go toward funding future space missions. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Time for us to splash down. That's our VOA Asia program for today. We invite you to come back again tomorrow. In the meantime, follow us online at Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and, of course, Facebook. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.